Live from Rock Vox Recording Studios in Rochester, New York, metal maniacs around the globe
unite.
Prepare for Metal Mayhem ROC. Now, welcome our hosts, John, the Vernomatic Verno, and Metal Forever Mark.
Hello and welcome to another edition of Metal Mayhem ROC. I'm your host, John, the Vernomatic Verno, and tonight we take a trip down heavy metal memory lane. I have the honor to share the story of Ron Stein, a true heavy metal hero. Ron will tell in detail his entire story. From collecting rare and valuable records as a hobby in the mid-70s, to the visualization, development, and eventual opening of a game-changing retail import record store of his own. So let's get it going. Live from Port St. Lucie, Florida, Ron Stein.
Hey, John, how you doing?
Good, Ron. How you doing tonight?
I'm great for an old guy. Doing good.
Good. Well, first and foremost, how's the family doing with this health climate that everyone's going through?
We're doing fine here. Jackie and I are sheltering in place. She only goes out to the grocery store once a week, and I just go out once a week to get a takeout meal on Saturday night. We give them a credit card over the phone. They put it in the trunk, and we're good to go. So other than that, we're sheltering in place, and nobody's getting near us, so we're good.
Well, good. I'm glad you mentioned your wife, Jackie, because through the course of the next three episodes of Metal Mayhem ROC, we're going to give you the chance to tell your story in the rock and roll and heavy metal retail business. And Jackie, your wife's been with you the whole ride. So I'm glad you introduced her. At this point, I'm going to let you take over and get the ball rolling. So further ado, Ron Stein and his entire rock and roll story.
Okay, I'm glad you mentioned Jackie. She plays a very important role as we go forward. But anyway, my story starts in 1969. I went to University of Buffalo. I took a rock and roll history course, and that got me going as a collector of 50s and 60s rock and roll stuff. From that point forward, for the next 4 or 5 years, whenever the weather was good in Rochester, during the good weather months, I'd be going out doing the garage sales, looking for slabs of vinyl. So we start the story here in 1975, probably the springtime, maybe the early summer of 1975. I'm going around to garage sales looking for records, and I keep running into the same guy every place I go. And so we started talking, and we developed a friendship. Turned out he collected jazz, and I collected the old rock and roll stuff. We got together and we decided that we're going to get together and swap records once every couple weeks. It was another set of eyes being able to look for stuff for the other person, getting into places maybe the other person didn't get into. So we got together every couple weeks and we swapped. That guy's name was Dick Storms. And so we got to be pretty good buddies, and we did our trading. Now, it turned out that Dick and his wife were antique dealers. He was a mason, and in his spare time, he and his wife were antique dealers, and they had a booth at the flea market that used to be in operation in the old Arlen's building on Jefferson Road across from Southtown Plaza.
Okay.
So I would go down there because that was another pretty good place to find records. There were lots of dealers in there, and you could find vinyl lying around on the tables in there. I went down there every week and visited with Mr. Storms and his wife, and we got to talking. The conversation turned to the idea that we could bring our doubles down there, stuff that we didn't need and stuff that we knew people would want. We could sell them. And we could take some of the money that we were going to make, turn around and buy more records. We could put up a sign saying that we bought records. And we as people brought them in, we could keep the stuff that we wanted for ourselves and use the money to buy more stuff. So it just seemed to be a good outlet for both of our hobbies, given the fact he was an antique dealer. And, I thought it was a real good idea.
Well, you mentioned that Dick was a Mason. At this point, the records was a hobby. Were you working? Obviously, this wasn't supporting you financially. Did you have other outside work that supported you?
Yes. My degree was in accounting. So at that time, I was working as an accountant and data processing manager during the week. So that was my way of making a living. And Jackie was working at various jobs at the time. She worked in banks as a teller and worked at Beneficial Finance in Ridgemont Plaza for a while. So both of us were out in the working world making a living at that time. And, you know, records at that time were just a hobby. Both Mr. Storms and I approached this initially as hobbyists. We were just a couple collectors who were going to take our stuff to the flea market, make a little money selling our doubles, and buy some stuff for ourselves. And that eventually developed into something where we had business aspirations.
So at this point, it's the fall of 76. You guys are doing your weekend on Sundays, the flea market. How would you say business is going? Brisk business?
Well, you know, you're a year late there. This is the fall of 75.
Okay.
Right. We talked about it and got the whole thing going. The first Sunday after Labor Day in 1975. It took a while to get everything together. Mr. Storms made up a display board that we used in the booth, and we had to price everything up. So it took a little while to get everything going. So we finally got going the first Sunday after Labor Day, 1975, and we opened up in the flea market there on Jefferson Road.
And how was business? Did you see an increase? Was it brisk?
It was okay. You know, people gradually found us one by one, and at that point we were maybe doing a couple hundred, maybe $300 on a Sunday. You know, it was again, it was just at that point a hobby. You know, we were having a good time doing it. It was just a fun thing to do and made a couple of bucks. And, you know, we were just having a good time with it.
Sounds like a little bit of a labor of love. And in 1975, $300 in records, that wasn't that bad, I would imagine.
It wasn't that bad. But, you know, it was not something that anybody was going to, you know, make a killing on or make a living at. It was just a hobby thing.
Okay, so fall of 75 turns into winter of 75. I would imagine you continued through the winter with this operation.
We did. We were there every Sunday when the flea market was open. From all the way through January and February of 76, we were doing what we were doing. And then something happened to change the whole thing.
Oh, sounds like drama. What do you have?
Well, Jack Garner, the gentleman who was the theatrical and music critic for the DNC, had been a customer of ours, and he came down to the flea market and said, geez, you know, what you guys are doing here is really cool. I think I'm going to send a reporter down here to do an article on you guys. So next week, expect to see a reporter from the DNC, and, you know, he'll talk to you and take a couple pictures, and he'll do a little thing up in the paper on you. And that happened on the last Sunday in February of 1976.
Now, Ron, I'm glad you brought that up, because we've put together a thumbnail, a gallery page at metalforever.com. So throughout these podcast episodes, this is a three-part series, you could go to metalforever.com and click on Lakeshore Ron Stein, a gallery page, and see any of these visual aids. So you have the article from the DNC that Jack Garner did.
Yeah, he didn't do it. He sent a reporter down there to do it. But yes, that article will be in the visual aids.
Okay, so the DNC article, the reporter comes, he does a little story on your one day a week flea market record shop. And what happens?
Well, what happened was the day that article went in the paper, things totally blew up. I mean, we were just overwhelmed. We were mobbed with people bringing stuff in, buying stuff. It was amazing. It turned out that we really scratched an itch in the music market in Rochester that hadn't been scratched before. And it was just apparently the right time for the used record business in Rochester to start.
So the article ran, what happened after that?
It caused the business to boom, but the other thing that it caused to happen was events happened due to the fact that it boomed so much that one day, things happened that day that led to events that caused a irreconcilable difference of opinion between me and Mr. Storms as to the aims of the business. So it was a good thing for that day, but it also led to the split up of the partnership because of irreconcilable differences.
Ah, so this fresh partnership was terminated after about 6 months into it.
That's right.
So what was the next plan?
Well,
you divided the inventory. He bought you out. You bought him out. Was there a monetary divorce or what happened?
No, it was just, whatever cash there was got split in half, and the inventory got split in half, and he took his half and did what he did, and I took my half, and then I had to decide what I was going to do. Finally, in the beginning of June of 1976, I had been looking around for a spot where I could set up, and I found a flea market that was in an old church building on the corner of Buffalo and Howard Road in Rochester. And that was kind of a nice setup. They had a room available down the basement where I could set up. I could leave my stuff there during the week and lock it up, and didn't have to worry about bringing it there and taking it home. You know, I had a customer base that who knew me from the previous engagement that I had in Jefferson Road, who followed me down there. You know, basically, I kind of picked up where things left off with Record Archive. That was a good situation for a while. Again, it restored the fun to it. It kept my contacts going. There were people who were bringing me in, selling me albums for resale from the previous business, who also found me down there and brought me stuff down there. So it started a little slow till people discovered where I was, but it worked very well.
We're talking with Ron Stein on Metal Mayhem ROC. He's given us the back history of his retail record career. So we find ourselves in the summer of 76, it sounds like. Ron has opened up his own independent record gig at a flea market. But at this time, you have a one day a week. It's a brick and mortar location, in a sense, where you kept the stuff there. There was no moving inventory back and forth every week. You're able to put it away and lock it up for the week. That must have been an advantage in itself, right?
Well, you know, it was it was a little bit of an advantage, but sort of a lateral move from where I'd been before, because it was still one day a week, and it was still a hobby thing. So it was, basically on the same level as, what I had been doing before with Mr. Storms.
Excuse me, what was the name of the new place? Did you name your new endeavor?
Yeah, I called it the Phonograph Record Swap Shop.
Nah, that's a nice hook. So tell me about that. How did that go?
Well, again, it was a pretty leisurely thing. It went real well every Sunday. Then something started to develop that would lead me to the next thing that was going to happen. A lot of you guys who are into the metal for a long time will remember a gentleman who I think you know as Heavy Metal Bob, who had a shop out in Webster for quite a long time.
Bob Stewie's.
Heavy Metal Bob was
Heavy Metal Records.
Yes.
Okay.
Heavy Metal Bob was one of my early customers down on the Buffalo Road flea market. He came in there every week looking to see if I'd got any hard rock albums of the stuff that was popular at the time, you know, Ted Nugent or Montrose or any of that stuff that was out during the 1970s. Now, Heavy Metal Bob was also a sort of an avid record collector himself at that time. And he shopped all the places around Rochester looking for stuff for himself. He told me about a used record store that had opened up on Monroe Avenue called Play It Again Sam. It was open for, when he first told me about it, it had been open maybe 6-8 months or something like that. And it was not being managed correctly. they were having a lot of business trouble, apparently, and they had a sign up in their window that said "Save the Store Sale." They were making it very apparent that they were having problems. And he told me, "Well, you know, Ron, you should go down there and check that out, because there might be an opportunity for you to get in there and do something there on a 7 day a week basis, if you could maybe, you know, buy in there or make a deal with whoever owns that now to get in there and have an interest in it." So I did that. I went there and took a look around and saw what was happening there, and it was quite obvious. They were in a situation where they had really nothing saleable, or very little saleable, in the store. Apparently, just from what I understood from the fact that they had a save the store sale sign in the window, they probably didn't have much money to buy anything. So they were probably in a pretty dire situation themselves.
So at this point, the fall of 76. Ron, let me ask you, played against Sam, where was that located? Down in the...
It was at 668 Monroe Avenue. It's in a building that's now called Oxford Square. It's right near Monroe and Oxford Street.
Okay, so down near the city portion of Monroe Avenue.
Yes.
Okay.
So when Bob is telling me this, it's getting more toward the end of 76, the early part of 77, when he's telling me this, and I go down there and I take a look around. So I did that, and I saw the situation the store was in, and I asked the person running the counter. I said, who owns this store? They told me, well, the gentleman who started it and owns it lives in Boston. He lived in Rochester when he first started it. And shortly after the store opened, his job transferred him to Boston. So he was running the store on an absentee basis with employees running it. And therein was the heart of most of the trouble with it. I said, okay, well, let me go home and think about this and see what I want to do here. So I got hold of the guy in Boston. I told him, I run a flea market business selling used records, and I understand that you might maybe be in the market for another partner or investor for your business. And he said, well, yeah, that is a possibility. I'm coming back into town in a couple weeks. Let me take a look at the books, look around in the store, see the situation, and I'll get with you if it looks like there's a possibility we might be able to do something. So he came into town, he looked around, he saw that the situation was desperate. He called me and said, okay, Ron, I think we might be able to do some business here. Well, I need somebody to go ahead.
Let me ask you. So looking at the landscape, there's a piece of a business here, but the fact that there's an absentee owner, what kind of obstacles came up? What did you discover?
Well, you don't really discover the obstacles until you actually get in there. And before I discovered all the things that were going on, I had to get in there. So basically, I made a deal with the gentleman that I would throw enough money into the business to pay the outstanding bills that were getting past due. And I would bring my inventory from Buffalo Road, and I would own 50% of the business. So I got in there and I did that. And all of a sudden, I'm a managing partner with the 50% interest in a 7 day a week record store. That's when I had a chance to run it day to day and see exactly what the situation was and what I could do with it.
At this point, are you still doing the accounting gig? Are you still working full time?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I still have the daytime job. I go in there. When I got into Sam's, I got in there and ran the store on Saturday. Jackie came down and sat there and helped me do it. And the rest of the week, there were the employees who were running the store. The gentleman in Boston kind of made it a stipulation that I would try to teach the employees some of my expertise that I picked up in the record business and help them to maybe run the business in a more profitable way, I guess you could say. And also, because Heavy Metal Bob had, he was the one who clued me about this, and basically I wouldn't have gotten in there if it wasn't for him. He approached me shortly after I got in there and said, you know, I really could use a job. So I said, yeah, I kind of owe you a favor. So I hired him, and I gave him a shift in there for a day or two a week. along with the other employees who are already there.
How many employees did you inherit when you moved in there?
There were two there to start with that I kept, and plus then Heavy Metal Bob. So there were three. That really ended up being too many. You don't really see the problems that are inherent in something until you get in there and actually run it on a day-to-day basis. And it became obvious before too long that there were a number of problems with that business. Number one, it had acquired a bad reputation from the way it had been run before I got into it. And that was hard to overcome. I turned it around immediately once I got in there to a point. I added collectible records, which they hadn't been selling collectibles in there. It was just pretty much a $3 used album store at that point. So I started selling collectibles, Beatles picture sleeves and 50s out of print albums and a lot of the things that WCMF was playing at the time that were out of print, that like The Good Rats Tasty and It's a Beautiful Day and all those sorts of things that were Rochester collectibles. So I added all of that. I got the business to turn around to a point. I also added new merchandise of the type that I felt would sell down there to the sort of hippie market that was down there, some folk blues kinds of things, our Hooli and Alligator labels and bluegrass types of things, singer-songwriter folk and things like that that were, you know, at that time, that was what the neighborhood was into. So I added all of that, and the business improved pretty quickly, but it only was capable of improving to a point, so I found out, because of the fact that it had the bad reputation from before, and also because it was a situation where for a business that was the size that it was and doing the volume that it was, there were too many people digging into it money-wise. And for that reason, it was impossible really to make the kind of reinvestment that you needed to make it really grow. I got it to a point, and another incident happened there with the partner that I had, which incidentally, I had made sure this time that I got an ironclad partnership agreement, including what would happen if either partner wanted to exit the business.
Okay.
An incident happened with him that really made up my mind that this was not a situation I wanted to be in long term. It was not viable. I really felt that I wanted to extricate myself from it. And again, take the things that I had learned there and do something else on my own.
At this point, what was the timeline? If you started at January 77, what is this, like a year into it?
Yeah, we're talking about, we're getting to the end of 1978 here.
Okay. You, it's running its course. It's not all it's cracked up to be. What do you decide to do?
Well, first thing I had to do was come to some sort of settlement with my partner in Boston, which I did. I invoked a clause in our partnership agreement that basically got us talking about realistic terms to dissolve the partnership and have it end up with me, because, I mean, it was not practical to have him own it. That's what caused the problems to begin with. He was in Boston. Basically, the discussion centered around getting the business into my hands. My plan initially at that time was to get it into my hands and then put Jackie in there to run the store during the day and have me run it on the weekend. However, before I really had a chance to do that, one of the girls who worked there came to me and was very emphatic about the fact that she wanted to buy the business from me. So I thought about it and I said, yeah, well, again, it might probably be better for me to start something fresh from the ground up that doesn't have the stigma attached to it that still was attached to Sam's from when it had been mismanaged, rather than try to continue with that and struggle with, you know, trying to get past the history of the store. So I said, okay, well, let's do that. I'm going to turn around and I'm going to sell Sam's to the girl who wanted to buy it. And then after that, I will decide what I'm going to do next. So that deal consummated, I believe, in the first week of January 1979.
So January 79, you do a quick pivot. You buy out the absentee owner, turn around, and you agree on some terms with an existing employee. You're out of Play It Again, Sam, with a 3-year payoff plan and a 5-mile no compete.
That is correct. You can't really sell somebody a business and then turn around and open up across the street from them. That's not the moral way to do business. So there was a 5-mile covenant not to compete. So basically what I ended up doing was after I consummated the deal on Sam's, I got a city street map of Rochester, took a compass and drew a 5-mile radius circle. And I looked to see exactly what options were available to me that were outside of 5 miles from that address. Now, before I did that, I had to first get a store together. And I continued to do that. I continued to go around to garage sales, buy albums. I still was dealing with the contacts I had who were selling me records for resale. And gradually over the next year and 9 months, I built up an inventory. I got very lucky. I got a store full of records, a whole store full of record store fixtures from an old J.M. Fields department store that was going out of business on Spencerport Road in Rochester. They went out of business and auctioned off their entire fixtures right at the time that I needed them. And long story short, I had a friend of mine go in there because I was still working at the time and the auction was during the day. I had a friend go in there and bid on the auction for the entire record department fixtures. No one was bidding against him. I got the entire record department fixtures for a total of $10.
Ooh, so, unheard of.
Yeah, I know that, something like that happens and it kind of tells you you're doing the right thing.
Well,
you know?
Just looking at this timeline, it looks like a perfect segue. The 70s are coming into a close and you're ready for the 80s. So on the next episode of Metal Mayhem ROC, we're going to see what the 80s brings for Ron and Jackie Stein, what direction they go and what groundbreaking events they do. This has been the Vertimatic on Metal Mayhem ROC. We'll talk to you next time. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Metal Mayhem ROC. Check us out at metalmayhemroc.com and metalforever.com for info on upcoming concerts, archive podcasts, and photo pages. Please like, follow, and share everywhere. Catch us next time, and keep it heavy.